But I like music, man. That's why I like to go to the airport early, you know? They always play great music. They always have unbelievable sound systems. You get there early, you take advantage of that. You just jam to the best music known to man. Occasionally there's an announcement, but other than that, you're just getting into the music, you know? Yesterday, all my, would the gentleman who left a briefcase at the security area of Concourse C please return to claim your briefcase? And it seems like all unattended vehicles will be towed away at the owner's expense. Oh, I believe there's been a gate change for flight 207. It'll now be departing out of gate 19. Yesterday. I love that song. Takes my mind off traveling.
WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen. Thanks for joining us here on this Thursday morning. Gorgeous morning. Clear sky. We're in the about 36 degrees. Sun is up. Oh, what a great day to be alive. Huh? It's 7:08, and this is WRJN Historical Marker number 5. And a brief rundown of why I do these is because I was at a friend's funeral, and there was not, after 30 years in radio, no voice air checks of this man. In other words, there was nothing to prove he was ever on the radio in 30 years. And I said, I'm not going to let that happen with WRJN. So I'm trying to get all the people that are still alive. We're starting with the oldest people first, because those are the people. Tony Gazzana, our owner, was the first guy on there. And I told him that. I said, I'm going with the oldest people first because I can't count on you being around in years. And he said, well, I'm glad you appreciate me. Anyway, so we're at number 5 with Pete Ferrand. And you were afternoon host here for what years? Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember. Hello there. And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
This is fun. It's always, it really was.
It's like stepping into the Twilight Zone, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. It seems long ago and far away.
Yeah.
It was from 2005 to 2011.
So the last time you were in this building was...
The last time I was in this building was much more recently, because okay. Racine County had its open day, and WRJN was a participant in that, and it was shortly after the place was sold from Bliss to Magnum, and the Carcos were still here and so forth. So that's when I was in the building, so I saw some of the changes, but it's been at least 6 years now, five, 6 years.
Yeah, when I came in here after 9 years, it was like an out of body experience, because I was here for 24 years, then I was gone for 9, and now I was here before that because I used to meet with Lou Turner. We went out to lunch, and I used to pick him up here and stuff. It's kind of a freaky thing to go back when you've been gone so long. And so Pete Ferrand was here, did Afternoon Drive, we called it, on WRJN Radio. And let's go back to a little bit before that. Where are you from?
I am originally from New York City.
New York City or in Manhattan, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island? Where?
I was just going to say that. Was born in Queens. The first 12 years of my life spent in Manhattan, and then we moved to the South Bronx. So depending on whom I'm talking to, I can say, I'm from Manhattan, or, yeah, I'm from the South Bronx.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Manhattan, lived in the Bronx, but mainly grew up on Long Island.
Yeah.
My dad said, we're getting out of here.
Yeah. Usually a wise choice, and a lot of people did.
Little did he know, the house he bought in Massapequa would be 10 blocks from the Gilgo Beach killer, the serial killer. He lived 10 blocks from us. And then you had the Mary Jo Buttafuoco shooting.
Oh, yes,
by Amy Fisher, which was also in our town of Massapequa.
Yes.
And we had Carlo Gambino, the godfather for Massapequa.
Massapequa is a big place, really, geographically.
Yeah.
It covers a lot of area. My dad worked in Lake Success, New Hyde Park area for many years.
And Queens, Long Island.
North,
yeah.
Well, on the North
yeah.
Shore.
Yeah.
So I was much more into the North Shore.
People are confused that Queens and Brooklyn are physically on Long Island.
Yes, and they're counties officially.
Right, but they're not. When you say Long Island, you think of Nassau and Suffolk County,
yeah,
which are the more uncity-like areas. But yeah, they're physically on Long Island, I guess. I hate when people say, where are you from? Long Island. Well, Long Island, Nassau and Suffolk County are 103 miles long. Could you like narrow it down a little bit?
Yeah,
I'm from Long Island.
Right.
There are like 80 towns on Long Island. Which one are you from? Okay, so you're born in Queens.
Yeah.
And
only a couple miles away from where Donald Trump was born.
Yes, I know that. Yeah, my dad used to work with his father on certain projects.
Yeah.
Okay, so when did you get the radio bug?
Oh, gosh. I was about probably 6 or 7 or 8 or something like that.
Yeah, most people in radio were, yeah.
Most people were, and most people in a lot of jobs. I had a doctor, and I mentioned this in some context to the doctor. He says, yeah, I knew I wanted to be a doctor when I was 9 years old. So there are a lot of jobs, a lot of people who have jobs who have this calling, and radio is one of the jobs you have to have a calling for, because otherwise you can't put up with it.
But, yeah, the kids who were doctors said, yeah, I was playing doctor my neighbor's kids there when I was 9 years old. We take off the clothes and I play doctor on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, but in radio, we all had basement radio stations.
Yeah, I had an amateur radio station.
Yeah, you were the amateur, you had that ham radio stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I never got into that. I went to Lafayette Electronics.
We all did.
Bigger electronics store on Long Island. They had everything. They were like the Best Buy of their day, but super Best Buy.
They also had a lot of parts to build stuff with. And they were in Syosset. Their big store was in Syosset.
On the North Shore, yeah.
They had one in Queens. I don't remember Queens Boulevard area.
But the one in Syosset was the big one.
That was the headquarters, yeah.
And I bought a radio transmitter,
uh-huh.
a little radio transmitter, and I hooked it up to my reel-to-reel recorder, with my automatic reversing one, and I had a 24-hour-a-day radio station. Before that, I had a Remco Caravelle radio.
Oh, yeah.
When I was about 8 or 9 years old.
Those show up occasionally on eBay.
I got one.
My son got
me one. It was a mint condition.
Very good.
Okay, so you got the radio bug, and when did you get on professional radio?
On professional radio at age 17 at WHN,
now,
which used to be around.
Huge radio station. Huge.
Yeah, it was not well respected in the radio market.
AM 1050.
Because they were like number 9 or number 10 in the market, not number 1 or number 2.
But still, it was New York City.
But it was still 50,000 watt New York City radio station. I was a summer engineer, they called it at the time. Summer relief engineer, and I did the overnight shift, which is what I liked doing. That's the one I would pick. And it was a lot of fun, and I got to meet all these people and see how it worked, and said, my major market isn't all that great. The pay was good, but
you know what? And a lot of radio people realize that they fight to get to the major market.
Yeah.
When they get there, they realize it's the same as the smaller market, but with higher wattage, and that's about it.
No, actually, I would disagree with that. It's more of a competition and more backbiting.
Oh,
and
really?
More just general negativity and so forth. In the major market stations that I've worked for, which include over the years the WHN, WHDH in Boston, a station whose co-letters I can't recall now in East Providence, Rhode Island, there's a lot of this backbiting going on and a lot of negativity. It's just, it's not
really
pleasant.
I was very lucky. I had backbiting at every station I worked at.
Yeah, right.
So WHN, you were an engineer.
Yeah, I was they called it an engineer because of union requirements, but it was actually board op, what you and I today would call a board op.
What I'm doing.
Yeah, what you're doing used to be called combo in the business because you're both on the air and running the equipment. What I was doing, I was sitting in a room with a console just like you have. Well, anyway, this RCA console, and then there was an announcer in an adjacent room, and we looked at each other through the glass.
Some big names came from there. Now, when you were there, they were probably what they call middle-of-the-road music.
Absolutely.
They later became country and became a huge powerhouse in New York City, WHN.
It absolutely did, and then it turned to sports and religion and went down whatever. It no longer exists in any estate.
Yeah. But so where'd you go from there?
And HN was on 400 Park Avenue, by the way, next to the Lever Brothers building, which is famous for architectural reasons. I would look out
and
the window
soap.
and see this amazing building on. So I was taking the subway at close to midnight on, which was a trip and a half also because I would commute with by subway.
So where'd you go from there?
Where I went from there to Mount Kisco.
Now, Mount Kisco is just outside Manhattan.
It's about 30 miles north of the city. And I would commute by Penn Central, the late lamented Penn Central Railroad.
WVIP?
No, the other one.
That's the only one I know in Mount Kisco.
Yeah, and that's gone away too, I think.
Yeah.
WRNW was the call letters. And we have a WRNW now, I think, did recently here.
In Milwaukee,
Milwaukee.
The 97 FM.
They've picked up the call letters. But that station later on moved from Mount Kisco to...
Spring Valley?
No. It moved south to... I can't think of it right now. It's at our age, the pressure of thinking sometimes and coming up with words sometimes disappears. It went to a place that Briarcliff Manor,
yeah.
And Howard Stern worked there. That was his first commercial station.
Right, Briarcliff Manor, right. Howard Stern talks about that all the time, how he got started. He played an air check.
Oh, really?
Some from there. He was awful. He was just terrible. I mean, I listened to air checks of myself in my first radio job, and they're awful.
Sure. Yeah.
You always say, how was I employed at this company?
Right.
What cocaine high was he on when he hired me? Pete Ferrand is here. It's WRJN, historical marker number 5. We'll talk about his years here at WRJN coming up shortly. First, we got to work our way here because we plucked this guy out of New England when we found him.
Yes, he did.
That's coming up in just a moment. 7:18, make it 7:19 and now. WRJN Radio. Cloudy today with a high near 43. Mostly clear right now, 36 degrees. Historical marker number 5. Pete Ferrand is here, and we're talking about his career and how he wound up at WRJN Radio. Okay, so you wound up upstate New York, or not upstate, but just north of Manhattan in Briarcliff Manor and Mount Kisco. Eventually, you get to New England somehow. How'd that happen?
Yeah, I was working in Utica, New York for a traditional station, much like this was when I started, WIBX, which is still around and still doing news talk on 950 out of Utica. Has numerous management and ownership changes over the years, obviously, because we're talking about 50 years ago.
Yeah, more than that. Yeah, about 50 years ago.
50 years ago. And in fact, the station was, it's 74 this day. That station was in the middle of its 50th anniversary, so they had a big party and all that stuff, as usual. Started to disintegrate, and I don't remember why, but I wound up in New Hampshire, taking a job in New Hampshire, doing afternoon drive in Keene.
Thinking your life was over?
No, not really. it was basically about the same thing, another 5,000-watt radio station, another 5,000-watt directional station. And what happened then? Well, it's a long, long story here. I don't know if that it's relevant to anything today. But I got into a deal for, a station in Nashua, New Hampshire lost its license due to numerous improprieties that there's no need to go into now.
Which is pretty not uncommon in radio.
No, not really. And I formed a group to apply for that station and apply for the license. And long story short, nine years later, we got bought out because the principles that we had a competitive application for had changed. The FCC changed on what they were looking for and what was desirable. So I did wind up in Nashua and basically switched careers for a number of years. I did documentation consulting and course development for the computer industry, which in the 1980s was going great guns around Boston. So Nashua is basically a suburb of Boston, if you want to consider it that. So I had a bunch of jobs with, not actual jobs, but contract assignments with companies like Digital Equipment Corporation and Honeywell and Lotus and Data General and a whole lot of other companies that no longer exist. Which is most of those.
You know, somebody told me when I was first got into radio, we always went when I was a kid to New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine on vacations, summer vacations. I said, I want to work in New Hampshire. And I remember the guy at the radio station said, you will starve to death if you work in New Hampshire. Because remember, I was coming from Long Island, and they pay top dollar, $1.85 an hour.
Yeah, right. So I got $2.15. So. Yeah.
Well, I later went to $2.50, but that's a whole story how I got that raise. But they said you'll starve, so I did apply to New Hampshire, a station in was licensed to Mount Washington.
Oh yeah,
WHOM was the name of the station.
Right,
and the guy's name was Peter Thing, and I get a call one day at my mother's house. My mother said, a Mr. Thing called you.
What,
from the Adams family? Mr. Thing? He said his name was Mr. Thing. Yep. I called him up, and his name was Peter Thing, and he offered me a job to come to New Hampshire. And all going through my mind, like the two little, the devil and angel on your shoulder, you'll starve if you go. Don't take the job. It's nice. You'll starve if you go. And so I didn't take it. But so you're
Marty on the mountain.
So when did you...
I got to finish that story, though. WHOM had a TV station as well, and it was located on top of Mount Washington, and I would pass by it whenever I went to Mount Washington.
5,000 feet up.
I don't know. Whatever the number is. Yeah. It's the highest peak this side of the Mississippi River in the Northeast. And they had a TV station as well as the FM station, and... He just died a few years over this past year. They had an engineer because they had to staff the transmitter 24/7. And they had this one engineer who was told the first day that he got to work, he said, you're doing the weather. So the station had this gimmick of one of the engineers would do a weather forecast from the mountain. And his name was Marty something. And so for like 24, 28 years, Marty on the Mountain was doing a weather forecast with absolutely no broadcast experience on air. And he would say frequently, I'm not a meteorologist. I'm an engineer.
Well, they had to live up there in the winter.
They had to live up there, absolutely. Because there's no way to get up or down.
Right. In the wintertime, you can drive your car up there in the summer.
Oh,
because,
sure.
Because, yeah,
and
we did it
a lot
twice.
A lot of people did. Yeah, every time I had visitors from out of town, we'd go up Mount Washington because that was a thing to do.
It's a scary road to get up there.
It is.
And
you can also take a cog railway, which is very expensive and very slow.
Yeah. The cog train, yeah.
But that's the other. But that station never really worked from Mount Washington, and it no longer is. The FM station covered most of New England. Somebody in 1950 thought it was a great idea, but they couldn't sell advertising because a local gas station isn't going to pay for the whole, for three states of coverage. So they had a problem. Jack Parr owned that station for a little while.
The Tonight Show, Jack Parr.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
finally this radio station project got ended, and I was able to look for a job. So I got a job. The first job was at in Manchester, and then there was another job in Peterborough simultaneously, and then another job in blah 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 blah, and I wound up in New London at a talk station doing morning talk, and that lasted for 7 years. And then the boss found somebody who would work for free.
His son-in-law?
No, not his son-in-law, but a guy who sold time on the station in return for working
for
free.
So that's what he did? He replaced you with somebody who would work for free?
Yes.
I've never been replaced by someone who would work for free. I've been replaced by people, relatives I've had to work with before, but... Never that. All right, we're talking to Pete Foran this morning, and we're going to tell how we plucked him out of obscurity in New England and how he got here, which is kind of an interesting story. That's coming up here at WRGN Radio in our historical marker number 5 today. It's 7:28, and there was something I had to say, and I forgot what it was. Oh, tonight... the State of the Union address is going to be held, and our own Stuart J. Wattles will be commenting on that after the State of the Union address. So be listening for that here at WRJN, Hometown Radio Refreshed, a civic media station. Diamond. It's 7:35 at WRJN Radio. It's our fifth WRJN historical marker. We're marking the history of WRJN Radio. Pete Foran is here today. So, you come to WRJN, we pluck you out of obscurity in New England. You can't remember the radio station we got you from, though.
I remember it was on 1400. It was somewhere around 1400, just
really?
Like this. So 1420, actually.
Now, how did we get you? You applied, or?
Oh, yeah, there was an ad on the web, on the internet.
Internet or Broadcasting Magazine?
No, internet. Okay. Broadcasting Magazine had already gone sort of
south, marginal.
Okay. Yeah, it's still around, but it was no longer the Bible. It was the late lamented All Access webpage.
Oh yeah, they're around a little bit, not
a
like
little
they
bit,
used to
but
be.
They but
yeah.
they don't do what they did
yeah.
then.
Okay, what did we ask for? What were we asking in the ad for?
I don't remember exactly. It was a talk show, talk show host.
And you said, gee, I have never been to the Midwest before in my life, which you probably hadn't been at that
point. Oh, yes, I have, because my aunt and uncle live in Evanston, and I visited them.
Oh, but you never worked in the Midwest.
No, I never worked in the Midwest, okay. But I'd been to the...
Well, yeah, you traveled here.
But traveled here, yeah.
Evanston, Indiana?
No, Evansville.
Oh, Evansville, Illinois. No,
I'm sorry. Evanston, now you got me confused. It's Evansville, Indiana, but my aunt and uncle lived in Evanston, Illinois, just north of Chicago.
Okay. So
the good neighborhood.
Now I think we did the interview with you over the phone. We did it in person because I met you at the airport.
Right, you did both, actually. There was a phone interview as there normally
I remember
would be.
We're sitting at the airport. And we're watching the people come through thing. And we're seeing, we don't know what you look like.
That's right.
So we're seeing these weird people. I said, oh, I hope that's not him. Oh, gee, please, God, don't let that be him. Please don't. We're seeing these, like, really strange human beings walk through. And finally, you walk through and we meet you. And
after a run on Midwest Express.
Yes, what a great airline.
They
closed them down.
That was a pleasure. That was in April of 2005.
So you come here, and we hire you for afternoon drive, which was like, what, 2 or 3 to 6 o'clock or something like that?
It changed a couple of times.
Okay, we hired you for a talk show.
Mike Gallagher was my predecessor, I believe. Do you remember Mike?
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, at that previous station, I had a run-in with Mike Gallagher, because we also had Mike Gallagher, and one of our regular listeners had told Mike Gallagher on the air that I had said something abhorrent in some mysterious way. And so they got Mike Gallagher to call me on the air, on his air, at the station, and answer for my transgression, whatever political point I made, I don't know. Well, it turned out, of course, that the regular listener had gotten things mixed up, and in fact, I agreed with him on whatever that point was. But he asked me a bunch of other questions on politics, and one of the questions stays in my mind for the 20 years now, and he said, do you like the war? Now, the Iraqi war was going on at that point. I said, do you like the war? And usually I can come up with an answer, but I couldn't come up with an answer to that, because it's like, do I like the war? No, I don't. I love wars. Yes, kill, kill, kill. What, from Alice's Restaurant? So I said that was my Mac Gallagher moment.
Yeah, he badmouthed me on the radio because somebody called him and said, "Well, this guy Don Rosen on Sound Off is just raking you over the coals," and he got on and just badmouthed me, and he badmouthed me for working at a local small station, which we used him as an we were one of his affiliates.
Right.
And he's bad-mouthing one of the affiliates on the air. Whatever happened to Mike Gallagher?
I have no idea.
Now, I remember I felt terrible because his wife passed away from cancer.
Okay.
And I felt terrible, and I sent him a note saying my condolences. I felt terrible. But I don't know what happened to him. He kind of vanished. He was one of the right-wingers on the radio.
One of many.
Yeah, so he vanished. So you did afternoon drive here.
Yep.
That's the only shift you ever did here, right?
Other than fill in. I mean, if our morning guy took off, or if you took off, I filled in for you sometimes.
Yeah, or if somebody got arrested, had to spend jail overnight.
Yeah, incarcerated is always an issue.
Filled in until we came up with bail. That was always good. By the way, don't laugh. That happened here. One of our employees here was arrested, and we had to go down and bail her out. And I went down with our general manager at the time, was Tim Edis.
Oh, yeah.
We were at a Christmas party, and we had to go bail her out of jail. And then she had an ankle bracelet on when she worked here.
Golly.
And I said, but she was very good at what she did. She was a telemarketer for us.
Okay.
But she, couldn't keep herself out of jail.
And it wasn't
it was just violating things that she shouldn't have, like showing up at somebody's house and stuff like that.
Yeah, minor. No, it was relatively minor.
Yeah, it wasn't drugs or anything like that. Okay, so you're here at WRJN. What are some of the highlights of your career?
Well, I've had there were a lot of it. This was about the best job I've ever had, really, on the air. Because we were doing actual radio as opposed to marginal radio, which some of my other jobs were about. And we were actually making a point and actually having useful and interesting guests. Now, one thing that happened, now we're going to jump ahead. Since I left the station, what I've been doing is voice work as a voice actor, doing audiobooks and things of that nature. And just about 3 weeks ago, I had an audiobook that I got to do, and it was the heretofore undiscovered works of Lysander Spooner. Lysander Spooner was a Massachusetts lawyer and abolitionist who died in 1875. And I needed to find out who it was I was actually working with, because obviously it wasn't him. So I Googled the guy's name when I found it from the webpage that I was working with, and I found that this guy that I was working with now had written an article about Yuri Maltsev, okay, about in 2011. And I said, Yuri Maltsev, golly gee, he was one of my favorite guests. Yuri Maltsev was an economist who worked for Mikhail Gorbachev in setting up the economy of Russia after the Soviet Union broke up. He later escaped, wound up at Carthage as a professor, and I found him there, and he was here several times on the air talking politics. And so I wrote to my new client with the audiobook, and I said, I know Yuri Maltsev. He was a regular guest, etc. And the guy said, that's utterly amazing. I never met him, but I've listened to every one of his lectures that are on, you know, on YouTube or whatever it was. So I said, okay, that's an interesting context. Now, Yuri unfortunately died last year. So,
but he was here on WRJ. Was he ever in the building?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He would always come into the building.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, he was a lot of people did, and that was always my preference, if people were willing to show up. We had a couple other professors from Carthage as well show up. We had a number of interesting guests. I had Judge Napolitano on whenever he had a book to flog.
Oh yeah, the hanging
New
judge.
Jersey. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
That's a good guest to have, Judge Napolitano. He was a big Fox guy, Fox News guy.
Later on, yeah. We had a number of guests. Of course, we had every politician that came through here from time to time on.
Now, I know you had Paul Ryan on the air.
Oh, yes, numerous times.
And I'll tell you what. This is one day he was waiting to come on with you, and he was sitting in our lobby on that very same couch we have there now. He was on the other side, and he was sitting there, and I was still working late, and I came out. I said, Congressman Ryan, and he always wanted to be called Paul. Don't call me Congressman Ryan. But I did it.
Yeah.
And I was sitting on the couch talking to him. One-on-one, little did I know he'd be Speaker of the House.
Yes,
one of the most
reluctantly,
right. One of the most powerful men in this country, Speaker of the House. And here I am sitting on the couch, and I'm just sitting on a chair across from him, just shooting the breeze with Paul Ryan. And he was waiting to come on the air with you at the time.
Now, one of the things about Paul Ryan, and I know you don't want to do too much and get too much into politics, but I asked Paul Ryan a question that I was really hoping he would answer have a good answer for, because he's a bright guy and obviously a successful guy and so forth. And I said, you know, when I was a kid growing up, my parents would say the Republicans are for the rich and the Democrats are for the poor and the working class and so forth. And I said, this image persists to this day. Why is that? And, you know, shouldn't you change that in order to get more support? And he didn't have an answer to that. And I was very disappointed because I wanted to hear a good answer to that.
I would love to talk to politicians to get an answer to anything.
Anything.
They kind of rope-a-dope you, and they, you know, get around it, but they don't come out for the punch.
They answer other questions. You ask them a question, and they give you an answer to a different question.
That you didn't ask.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's been going around a lot lately. So what are the good guests that you have? Mainly you did a lot of just picking up the phones and talking to
people. Picking up the phones, which actually is more fun because it's more unpredictable, and we give voice.
But you have your regulars too.
We give a voice to people who have something to say that are not routine, because politicians, you know, they're going to promote themselves, and so is everybody else who's coming on the air. But random people from the phone, who knows what they're going to say? And that was the exciting part. I prefer radio the way we did it, without screeners and all that other production stuff that goes in. You know what was who was a great guest, and I had him on occasionally, was Tom Carco, and our news director, because we had most people who have been listening, I'm sure, remember Gary Becker, and the mayor, who.
I remember that morning.
It did not end well.
No.
He was arrested for attempted child...
Soliciting.
Attempted... Right. And Tom had gone down to City Hall and Police Department and all that. And so I asked him to join me in the talk studio. And so we spent an hour or so talking, because he had, you know, all these personal contacts, and in a 5-minute newscast, he's just going to say what happened, in the very excellent way that he always did, but it's only a couple of minutes. Could he devote to that? So we had the whole hour, and I got his personal impression of what happened there. And in ensuing years, he was able to come into the studio occasionally. Like I said, it wasn't a regular thing, but when there was a big story developing, he would spend time with me, and we would talk about the details from his point of view. And I thought that was wonderful.
He did that on Sound Off, too, after his newscast. Then we get into the stories a little more. He was my first guest I had here when I came back.
Wow.
He is the station historian.
Yes.
There isn't anything about the history of this station that he doesn't know. As a matter of fact, some of the people who are going to come in and do the historical marker, I'm not familiar with. I know their names, but I didn't work with them.
Sure.
So Tom is going to have to come in and sit here with me and talk to them. You know, you can interview people, but I'd rather have somebody who can say, do you remember with the time you did? I won't remember that time because they were before me. But Tom is the station historian.
Yeah.
And it's so great to have him as a reference to everything. He's a treasure to this radio station's history. So he was my first guest.
So that stands out. And we had some topics that stand out. We had the Kenosha Racine Milwaukee train project. Do you remember that?
Which is still going on.
And which, you know,
the mayor was talking about it.
Yeah.
KRM.
And I remain convinced that my original point of view was correct, which I usually am because I don't change my mind very often. But I keep saying, if this is going to work, why don't they just set up a bus service to run this route? And then if it's successful and people are filling up to the point that we can't get enough buses, then we can talk about a train. It costs 1/10 of the price, is more flexible, and we'll see if anybody actually rides it. But, you know, trains are sexier.
They're still working on it. And when the mayor was in here, I said, that they were working that when I moved to Wisconsin.
That's
in 1980.
Right.
They were still talking about that train thing. And he said something, and I can't remember his phrase, something like, certain things, you know, good ideas never die, or something like that. something like that phrase.
Expensive ideas never die.
Yeah, whatever. All right, we're talking to Pete Ferrand. It's our WRJN historical marker number 5. And coming up, we're going to find out, why did Pete Ferrand leave this paradise of radio? That's going to come up. And what he's doing today as well. So that's straight ahead here. WRJN, hometown radio refreshed. We're at 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, and 98.1 FM. WRJN Radio. I'm Don Rosen talking to Pete Ferrand at our historical marker number 5.
Hello.
Okay, so you're very successful. You're very happy here. You're here for a number of years at WRJN, and you decided to leave. Now, we didn't fire you.
No.
You left on your own accord. Why was that?
Well, you changed the format. I don't know how much you want to get into this.
What, to music?
No, not to music.
What did we do?
Wanted to go to an all-news format, or at least so you told me. That never actually happened, as far as I know. But that's what you told me.
I must have lied to you, because I don't think we ever went to an all-news format.
I mean, I don't want to get into an argument over this, but went to an all-news format without the local talk. And or at least that's what he told. And I said, no, I can't really do that. I'm not a newsman. Don't make me a newsman. It's been tried before and it hasn't worked. And so I said, I can't work. And the very lovely and talented Ted Elin took over.
But we never went to an all news format.
I know that.
But what?
But that's what you told me you wanted to do. I don't know if we want to get into this.
Maybe more news oriented.
We were always news oriented.
I know. I don't know. So you decided to leave here, and this is your last radio job, right?
Yes, this is the last radio job.
Okay, and
I kind of got tired of the whole. Anybody who follows radio knows that radio has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there wasn't much left that appealing, and then I didn't really want to move again and do all that. Now, I did have a really interesting job offer from not a radio station, but a TV station in Delaware, a place that I have been to very, very, very briefly, know nothing about, really. But what they wanted me to do, and they were ready to fly me out and everything. This was a Fox affiliate. They wanted to do a morning radio type talk show on TV. And it would be from like 6 to 9 or 6 to 8 or something like that. And with guests and, you know, phone calls and that kind of stuff. And that's what they wanted. And
well, Don Imus did that for a while on TV.
Yeah, but he was already
on MSNBC. That's what he was—the morning guy. He was
absolutely. Maybe that's what they were looking for. I don't know, but I didn't want to really feel like moving to Delaware. And the way they had structured that job, it looked like it would be 140 hours of work a week. You know, it just
like most radio jobs.
Yeah, like exactly, like most non-union small TV stations or radio stations. So I said, not really. So. What else can I do? And I went into being a voice actor and primarily audiobooks, but also commercials. And that's what I continue to do now, years later. I've done over 150 audiobooks.
Do we know any of the titles?
I doubt it. But you can look it up on audible.com with my, as Pete Ferrand.
You know, it's funny because I used to do some industrial audio for videos.
Right.
And people
right.
said, well, can I hear them? I said, well, one is for Case Tractors and their new Case Tractor, which is automated. And unless you plan on buying a tractor, you probably won't hear the demo.
Right.
But it was those type of things that nobody would ever hear unless you're buying a tractor.
Well, a lot of what I've done has been on YouTube. And for instance, I did a promotion for Garbley Publishing. Garbley Publishing, it's spelled like you'd think, garbled, you know. And what they are publishing is historical stuff relating to railroads. It's a small publisher in Pennsylvania. But if you go and look up Garbley Publishing on YouTube, you will find my voice in an old announcer style with a very, very nicely done video about what the company does.
I did one for, this is back in my early days in radio, I did one for how to play backgammon.
Wow.
And it was for a VHS video, and I was in the store one day, and I found it. And I bought the video, and sure enough, it looked and sounded great. And there was another one for a band orchestra. For their video, they did a little thing about the band, and I narrated it, and I said, actually, it wasn't bad. It sounded bad when you do it because you're sitting in a studio with no visuals,
right.
A script.
Yeah.
But when they put it together with the visuals, it wasn't bad. I still have it. It's on VHS cassette. I only just have to get a VHS player, and I'm right. All set.
Well, I never learned how to play backgammon, so
My wife and I played all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I love backgammon. I beat her every time. Okay. I feel bad when I beat her, too, because she takes it so well. But, I don't think she plays well. Anyway, so now you're still doing the audiobooks.
I'm doing audiobooks. And
which is great, because you can do that from home, right?
Absolutely. It's all done from home. I mean, it would be nice. It'd be nice to go down to a nice, expensive studio in Chicago with a director and an engineer, just like they did 30 years ago. But that hasn't happened. And it's not something I really am pushing for.
I think Mark's studio in Milwaukee, only once I went to a professional studio outside a radio station to record a commercial, and I didn't like the experience. because when you're doing it by yourself, you can do it. I'll do it again and again.
But
yeah, when you're dealing with these guys, all right, we like that take. We're going to take it. But I didn't like it. Well, I don't care what you like.
Right, exactly.
What you like is unimportant to me. It was for We Energies I did. Actually, Wisconsin Electric. It was before We Energies. So this is great talking to you. Do you ever think we'd be back together again on the radio, in this radio station?
Can never tell, right.
And that's it. You can never tell. When I walked back in here again, it started November 1st. Tom Carco and Jan Carco was in here. And I said, did you ever think we'd be sitting together in a studio on this radio station again? And they both said no. But it's good seeing you again. You look great. You sound,
thank you.
Your voice sounds just as you did when you were here.
Oh.
It hasn't changed. I interviewed Bob Barry recently. He was the king of radio in Milwaukee back in the 60s. He interviewed the Beatles on the air, Rolling Stones. His voice sounds the same as he did when he was back in the 60s. I couldn't believe it. You know, if you take care of your voice and don't smoke and drink, you know, you'll sound good. So good seeing you, friend.
Thank you.
I love Pete Foran.
Thank you
very much. Historical marker number 5. Who's going to be number 6? Got to keep listening for that, and we'll tell you. I'm Don Rosen. We'll do it again tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., bright and early here. WRJN, Hometown Radio Refreshed, a civic media station at 1400 a.m., 99.9 FM in Racine, and 98.1 FM in Kenosha.